Let's head to Cuba now, where after 12 years, Raul Castro has stepped down as president. Today, a new president was elected in a Cuban election with only one candidate. Communist Party loyalist Miguel Díaz-Canel is Cuba's next president and the first non-Castro to lead that country since the revolution in 1959. Canel has avoided the spotlight during his long government career, so that's raised the question, what will Canel's Cuba look like after 60 years of Fidel and then Raul Castro? Lillian Guerra is here to help us make sense of the transition in Cuba. She's professor of Latin American and Caribbean history at the University of Florida. Her latest book is Heroes, Martyrs, and Political Messiahs in Revolutionary Cuba. Dr. Guerra, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, 60 years, the Castro's step aside, is this still La Revolución?
Well, first of all, I don't think he's really stepping aside. I mean, Raul is mostly concerned about continuity of his policies and stability of the state as it currently exists. And that's precisely why he has made this move. I mean, it appears to be much more than it is. It's much more a move about containing what will be, I think, tremendously unpopular responses, or rather, tremendous responses to unpopular policy shifts that Díaz-Canel is going to have to carry out in the next several years.
Now, you're suggesting that Díaz-Canel is handpicked and that Raul Castro maintains power behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, Raul remains not just behind the scenes. He's the head of the armed forces. That means that he has not just military power in his hands, but the armed forces actually control 80% of the Cuban economy. They have the largest capitalist conglomerate in their hands called Gesa, which owns Gaviota, which in turn is the largest tourist company in Cuba. So they control all the foreign investment in Cuba. The army is basically the head of the economy, and Raul is the CEO of that. He is also going to remain head of the Communist Party, and he announced Díaz-Canel would be his successor in 2013. So this is not a big surprise to anyone. On the other hand, what I think is happening is that, as I said earlier, or I mentioned earlier, Díaz-Canel is going to be the face of certain policy shifts that Raul and his economists or his advisors say must take place in order for this communist-led capitalist regime to survive. And those are going to have terrible impacts on the Cuban people. So I think that Díaz-Canel in some ways is a fall guy, or going to be a fall guy. It allows this shift, or this transition, as it appears to be, allows for Castro to deflect blame for those policy shifts that are coming down the road and that have already been announced. In fact, they've provoked quite a bit of fear and trepidation on the part of Cubans.
Now, what about the economic situation up until this moment? There was a warming of relations, of course, with the United States, some economic reforms in Cuba, and then some of those seem to snap back.
Well, since 1992, the Cuban state adopted state capitalism, really, which means that it created a kind of neoliberal model of development that's very common in the Caribbean, where you have free trade zones, foreign investors bringing in all that is needed to basically create assembly plants and take advantage of very, very cheap labor. The state manages those free trade zones, and we also have the state managing and owning most of the tourist economy. And so the state is reliant on capitalism, despite the fact that it's a communist government.
Professor, you mentioned Miguel Díaz-Canel as just the face of some economic reforms and potentially the fall guy for difficult decisions and unpopular decisions that are coming to Cuba. Talk more about that. Surely he's aware of his position in relation to Raul Castro. Difficult times coming for Cuba.
Yes. I mean, Díaz-Canel is the survivor, really, almost the lone survivor of several of very prominent people of his generation who were about the same age and were very important to the capitalist reforms of the 1990s. Most of those guys who occupied very high positions in government, including Carlos Laje, was vice president for most of the last 30 years. Raul got rid of him. He got rid of Felipe Perestroque, who was minister of foreign relations between between 1999 and 2009. And Díaz-Canel, because he was head of operations for the party, we can say provincially, was off stage and was brought into the center of power by Raúl because he is something of a yes man to Raúl. He has stated in August in a meeting of the party, which leaked to the press, that he is very committed to censorship. He's very committed to censoring the internet, which is one of the main means by which the citizenry is able to block the monopoly that the state has over the press and over ideas. But more importantly, Raúl has been announcing since 2011 two major policy shifts that are economic in nature and that will devastate in many respects the stability of Cuba's Cubans' daily lives. So one is that he has announced that there will need to be an end to the ration, and this is rationing of foods, which have still continued since 1962, still continue to provide Cubans with most of their calories. He called that, Raúl did, a millionaire subsidy back in 2011. And so the ending of the ration system is something that is down the pike, and Díaz-Canel is going to have to carry that out. And then also, in a more complex way than we would expect, the economy operates based on a dual currency system. So the tourist zones and the free trade zones, the assembly plants that are run by the state with foreign investment, they receive money in hard currency, but they pay their workers in a local currency called the peso. And that trades at more or less a 1 to 25 ratio with the U.S. dollar. So most Cubans are earning about 10 to at most $30 a month, which is not enough to survive on. And what Raúl has announced repeatedly, in fact, in 2013, when he announced that his successor would be Díaz-Canel, he also announced that there would be a merging of the dual currency systems into one currency. And that will reveal, for how poor Cubans really are. If they are actually paying for things only in dollars and there is no subsidizing, we could say, of the economy through this means of paying Cubans in pesos and having certain items priced in pesos. Once you get rid of that, then you're really going to have a very impoverished economy, and there isn't going to be a way to hide that poverty. It's going to become more intense. And Díaz-Canel will be the face of that process. So to me, this is all about deflecting blame from the Castros and preserving their legacy. It's also a way by which Raúl, who is head of the military, will ensure that you have a kind of non-monolithic state. You know, that Díaz-Canel will carry out these policies, and if there is major blowback for them, then the other parts of the state, like the military, don't take the blame. The party doesn't appear to be taking the blame. It's the, you know, president of the Council of State who's carrying out these policies. And if there is protest, then Raúl could easily repress the protest and replace Díaz-Canel with himself and appear to be coming back, returning, as a sort of patron of the people, which he has never been.
Hmm. Lilian Guerra predicts difficult times, maybe even crisis times ahead for Cuba, and says that Miguel Díaz-Canel, new president of Cuba, might be the face and the fall guy of difficult reforms coming down the pike. Lilian Guerra, professor of Caribbean history at the University of Florida, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.